reading with a reading from the Ocean of Theosophy, which describes karma. And it is, karma is the action, is the law of ethical causation, action and reaction. It is justice, reward, and punishment. It is the cause of rebirth and birth, yet equally the means for escape from reincarnation. So, when we're looking at this idea of karma being the doctrine of responsibility, we do need to think of, well, what are we being responsible for? And karma is a response to man's moral choices. And we have choices that can come from the higher aspect of our nature or the lower. And it is the this responsibility and karma being a moral choice, it is one of the components of the second fundamental proposition of the philosophy, and that is law. Law rules all. It is the universal law of harmony. It is the universe's attempt to balance out anything that has made it unbalanced, depending upon what the choices are that we make. The universe will try and balance all of this out. And our actions and even our thoughts can unbalance this law. And karma can actually make it easier for people to understand why things happen to them. We can say that the effect is in the cause, that whatever happens, happens because of the choices that we have made. And we just recently mentioned that it's not only actions, but thoughts, and no man's choice is acted upon without a thought. And when we think of something and then act on it, this is what karma, the field of karma, is all about. The Bhagavad Gita says that whatever comes to us is our duty. We can also say that whatever comes to us is the result of karma. And it is what we have done in the past and what we are going to be doing in the future that will determine what is our duty. And by doing our duty without expecting anything in return and knowing that it is just, that it is coming to us, will help us make that moral choice. And we do want to mention here that out of the Ocean of Theosophy, there are three types of karma, three sorts, he says. The first is that which has not begun to produce any effect in our lives, owing to the operation on us of some other karmic causes. And mainly what this means is that there is karma that we have made in the past that in this life, it has no need to express itself. So it is kind of sitting in the background, just waiting. And sometimes, let's see, is this the third one? The third sort is that karma which has begun to produce results. So that's what we're experiencing now. But when we have satisfied the law of karma, depending upon how we act, how we think, that sort of thing, that kind of makes room for another, you know, some more karma to pop in, and one's life can be very different for the good or for the bad. So the second sort is that karma which we are now making or storing up by our thoughts and acts, and which will operate in the future when the appropriate body, mind, and environment come to life. And when we're looking at this idea of responsibility, this is where we can look, because we make these choices and it's our responsibility as to how they are going to play out. So when it says here that karma we are now making or storing up by our thoughts and acts, so this is how we can look at the responsibility, because no matter what we do, what we say, what we think, will affect our karma in the future. So whether it's bad or good karma doesn't really matter, because it's our attitude that affects us towards what is coming to us. So the choices that we make are the deciding factors as to how in the future our karma is going to play out. So it's our responsibility then that when we make these choices, that we need to be ready to experience how it's going to play out in a future life. So karma occurs, not, as we said, not just for a physical act, but also our thoughts as well. Because take somebody who's donating money, and they're donating it because they feel as though people are going to look at them and think how wonderful they are. Whereas somebody else will donate the money because they know it's the right thing to do. So karmically, that person, the first one who is expecting a reward, that is a negative karma that will affect them. Whereas the second person may get some benefit from that, from the way they were donating. Frequently, people will pray to an outside God for justice for them. They will petition with prayer to improve their lives, get more money, a painful situation be resolved. They will ask God, why is this happening to me? They want to know, why is it justice that, you know, Mary has all these things and she's a bad person, whereas I'm a good person and I don't get anything good, that sort of thing. And then some people even be thankful when they do get good things, that it was God that gave it to them. But we have to look at the idea that it is the choices that these people have made and the responsibility for the good or the bad results are based on our choices, not an outside God's. And we did want to throw in the idea of fatalism, because many people think that no matter how things are going, that they don't have a choice in what's going on. One always has a choice. Whether it seems fatalistic or not, We do have choices in what is happening in our lives. We may not feel it at the time, but there are choices we can make. And those choices, of course, come with the responsibility of the choice that we are making. So we can direct our actions and our choices. And we have the free will to make those choices. But as you're going to hear throughout this entire class, that all these choices come with the responsibility that those choice that the actions and the results will be. And if something seems to not be just, it is that we just don't see what the causes are. And that is the one of the many benefits of knowing about karma, is that if something doesn't seem just, that we can take the responsibility of knowing that what we see as an injustice is something that we have made, that choice we have made in the past, that choice and the action and the thought that we have made in the past. So we do not know what our real nature is, but we are spiritual beings. And if we don't know what our real nature is, then it's difficult to understand this whole idea of karma then. Because if we are spiritual beings, then that throws back on us the responsibility that we need to take for all the choices and thoughts that we will make. Karma is a law that is inherent in us all. If we do not understand this, then we do feel as though life is not just. But if we do understand it, then we can make those appropriate moral choices. Our choices are dependent upon our desires. And when we say behind will stands desire, that is an important point that we need to understand, is that our desires will determine how the will will act. So if we desire to be more spiritual, a more upstanding person, then our karma will follow suit. If we feel as though life justice is giving us bad experiences, those desires must be changed to more positive ones. So we need to make these, if we feel as though we are not being treated justly, we need to look at that and see where we can change our ideas. The more our desires are in line with justice, the karmic strength of impressions will lessen. That karma will be absolved, allowing a new type to emerge. So, to end, we can say, how is this idea of realizing the practical application of the justice of karma playing out? Understanding our spiritual nature. And knowing that we have the responsibility for our actions. We will now have the second speaker. Thank you.
That was a very thorough conversation on our topic this morning, responsibility. Karma is that doctrine of responsibility? Well, you can't dictate responsibility to anyone else. You can't tell someone else they're responsible for that. We have to recognize in ourselves the responsibility. So, how did we do that? Well, we became aware that most of the times when our actions, when we did something, we got a reaction, positive, negative, neutral, but we always got some kind of reaction in some manner, if not verbal, physical, whatever. So we became aware that in this world that we're living in, that there is this energy. And this energy is produced by ourselves. We're dynamic generators of force. We are creators of karma in our thought, in our word, in our deed. We create karma. And that's why we are asked if we want to become responsible for our karma, read the Bhagavad Gita. Live by those words that are pronounced in those pages. That will alleviate our karma to some extent. But we have karma that we haven't experienced yet. We're only experiencing a small portion. Remember, we are eternal beings. We have never not been. We've been in some form of manifestation. At some level of consciousness. So it's stated in the secret doctrine that we are beings of light who descended into darkness, into matter, and took on forms to reawaken that spark within the germ of all matter. And we, as eternal pilgrims, have gone forth and created these bodies which we now live in through eons of time, time countless in number. But we are the intelligence behind this. That the profound understanding. Is that we have created the world in which we live. But we didn't do it alone. We did it with each other. We have created this world, this illusion in which we now work in. And we have seen as we have emerged from this darkness, even in our civilizations. You know, that we are emerging into a new age, a new transition. The mind is awakening. And with that awakening of mind becomes responsibility. Because there are those that are not awake yet, that we have to hold out the torch for and show them the light. Our foundation, our real nature, we're here to benefit humanity in our thought, word, and deed. And how do we do that? How do we be of benefit to each other? We must shed the cloak of selfishness. That is the first that must go. And then we become unselfish. And we reap the rewards of that. But then we step into that space of selflessness that is timeless because one has placed one's self in the hands of karma, of the universe, with the intent of helping. So responsible. We cannot put aside what comes to us now. We cannot do it. It's coming. And we gleefully face it, because in no other way are we going to get rid of it. Even if it is sorrow, there is much to be benefited. So where is our sorrow? Where does it lie? It lies within us. Something that we feel incomplete with. And now we have lost it. But we are on a pilgrimage. We are on a journey. And karma leads us on. It's not fatalism, but what we have done yesterday is probably what we're going to do tomorrow. We are very consistent human beings. We like knowing what we are doing. So we find our lives where we are trying to create it, direct it. Very few times do we enjoy it. Our responsibility is to live in the moment, here and now, because it will not be here again. And what you do with it now is what is important. It's always important. So even though we have friends that have gathered together, we are here on Zoom. And because of the technology, but the karma, we are able to still communicate these ideas and ever keep alive the responsibility of life. No free rides. If you don't get your ticket punched at the beginning, you'll definitely get it punched at the end. So, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. That makes you responsible. Love one another. That makes you responsible. Universal brotherhood is a fact in nature. That makes you responsible. Lofty ideas, as was said before, raise up the consciousness of everyone. It seems that we are sometimes locked in this lower world of passions and desires because we're being bombarded with it everywhere. Everywhere. That which surrounds us are these passions and desires. That's why, if we do not control our own natures, it's almost impossible, because our consciousness is being directed away from ourselves, to outside of ourselves. Theosophy is directing our natures to look within, for thou art Buddha. And there is we when we were thinking of all this, we remember saying, "Oh, that wasn't my fault. Oh, phew, glad that didn't happen to me." And always these feelings of relief. But now, as we've gotten older, and we think we're going, "Yeah, go there for the grace of God, go I, or the gods, go I," because we do not suffer alone. Even though we do it in silence, our life is painted on our face. So always endeavor to smile. Always endeavor to say a good word. That's being responsible. But of course, you know that, because responsibility is something that we understand, or we don't do it. So it's like being grateful. Being grateful is being unselfish, even selfless. So I think we've pretty much talked about responsibility. I don't know if you have any ideas that you'd like to share with us or any questions. We invite you now to give it a shot. SL.
Several times it was mentioned how important morality is in taking responsibility for our karma or for our lives. Morality, of course, is doing the right thing with the right motive. But responsibility and morality seem to be more than just having good motive. It seems like to me we have to have knowledge as well, specific knowledge, because even with the right motive, if we do the wrong thing, we can create lots of problems for which we and others suffer. So isn't doesn't the doctrine of responsibility also imply we have the responsibility to learn, to gain knowledge about ourselves, about the world, about nature, all those commit all those things.
We think that ultimately what our responsibility really lies is to learn our true nature, to learn about ourselves, because we're a dynamic expression of the universe. The more we understand ourselves, the more we understand others. And the more that we become less judgmental. Because our understanding is that we are all human and none of us are perfect. So, it arouses that element of compassion, and morality lies in that field.
And it's important that we are aware, that we know when we're looking at knowledge, that the knowledge that we are all spiritual beings. And maybe even somehow be able to share this with others, because there many people don't understand this idea of being a spiritual being. And it's an important piece of knowledge that we do need to understand and just share that along with people, what it is.
Yeah, we would just have to say that. I mean, that is the crux of the matter, that we need to gain knowledge, but it needs to be spiritual knowledge, as was just spoken. SL?
To follow up, though, one of the things maybe we ought to re-emphasize is that karma itself is that unerring law of harmony and balance, which pervades all worlds, all systems, and it's knowledge of that law. So it would seem that our responsibility is to become a co-worker with that law of harmony and balance, to not just strive for our self-improvement our by ourselves, but seek to restore that harmony and balance as much as we can while we're here. It may be in facing our own flaws, but it might also be in helping the collective karma of our family, of our nation, of our race. We're responsible for that too.
Yes, and we hearken back to the Bhagavad Gita. We have to start in somewhere, right? So we start with ourselves. That's where we start. And the Gita says if we approach life not looking for the results of our actions, but giving it up to the greater good and being focused, being in the moment.
And if we can be a an example for others, the compassion, express the compassion, express the love, we think that that would probably be able to help lift up what others, how others need to be supported.
Yeah.
We haven't, Theosophy Hall.
So we are told that it is either a universal law or a universal chance. It can't be both. And there are many, though, that don't see any order in the world. Especially, well, always, but during times of great upheaval and change. So, what do you say to people that don't see any pattern or order, or they think life is inherently unfair, that there's a vengeful, angry God that's out to get them? Because karma is a doctrine of hope and responsibility, but many people don't want to take responsibility for their actions. They just don't. They just want a free ride.
Many, many people are blinded by their beliefs, by their ideas that they hold to be true. They're absolutely blinded by them. And the idea that you are not born into original sin, that we are actually gods in potential. They look at you like you're some kind of freak. Where you come from? I come from the stars, same place you came from. But they don't find that funny. So, I don't know.
No, it is hard to convince somebody because when one speaks of karma and fatalism, it's like they are just so opposite that, especially with this idea of karma, people, I mean, it's becoming more understood. More people know about karma now, but they don't look at it in the deep spiritual way that the philosophy does. And it's a hard thing to try and convince somebody that they're not poor, miserable sinners. SL, did you have a follow-up on that? And then we have somebody in Theosophy Hall.
Well, it's along the line that we've been talking about here. Karma is a doctrine of hope, responsibility, dignity, of course. But we cannot consider karma separate from its sister doctrine of reincarnation. So, reincarnation is also a doctrine of hope, responsibility, dignity. And we would think that. Depending on who you're talking to and their religious background, you have to bring into the conversation when talking about karma and responsibility the idea of reincarnation, because it's that idea that opens up our view and allows us to see the justice that can carry over from life to life. Mr. Judge says, it's the lost chord of Christianity. Karma isn't. As a man, so shall he reap, do unto others as you would have them do to you. That's not lost. But the idea of reincarnation has been lost, not just from Christianity, but from the thought of many people in the West.
Theosophy Hall.
Yeah, it was mentioned earlier, how important it is to live mindfully, to live, to work with the law. And see, that takes discernment. There are some who have this notion of what karma is, think what they do is appropriate because, well, because they did it and it's their karma, and whoever they affected, it's their karma to be affected by whatever I did. They wouldn't have gotten it if they didn't deserve it. So we're talking about mechanical theosophy. Can we delve into what Mr. Judge means when he talks about mechanical theosophy, so we know we need to be careful about it?
Well, you know, we look at cause and effect, and we look at people and we try to join things up, and we make judgments, you know, and that's mechanical theosophy. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about, you know, I think the first speaker mentioned that our karma is generated on three levels: on our thoughts, by our words, and by our deeds. All create vibrations, and these all have effects on those planes of being. So, you know, a mechanical theosophy, or looking at karma, would just be looking at really the mundane aspects of it, you know, but you can see cause and effect all the time. And, you know, some people play a game with that. You know, that was our karma, you know. You know, we can't judge. We have no idea. And we only can be sympathetic and grateful it didn't happen to us.
And we have to look at the idea that the spirituality of karma, it's not just on the physical plane, it's on the, you know, it's on the mental plane as well, so, and the moral plane. So we have to look at the whole idea that it's a spiritual experience. And we have a follow-up here in Theosophy Hall.
Well, what we think Mr. Judge means by mechanical theosophy is to take this attitude of sorts where under general law, under divine law, all the right things in terms of lessons and opportunities are going to come along to all human beings so that they can learn and grow and develop according to the path of their soul. But mechanical theosophy comes in when someone makes the decision for himself that I'm the authority here and I'm going to affect someone else. And if they have a problem with that, well, that's their karma. And so that's an example of some people will act as though they think they're supposed to be the agent of divine law, when actually they're breaking the law themselves in setting that cause and effect in motion. And so the point Judge makes in that is we need to use our discernment when we're working with the law.
So it sounds as though we have to look, as we said earlier, we have to look at this whole idea that it's a spiritual experience. It sounds as though this idea of mechanical theosophy is not on the spiritual plane. So if we look at it as a spiritual and a moral experience, then it can be more appropriate then.
Well, it just, you know, whatever comes to us is an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all we can say. SL, you had a question?
Well, and then SL, we have a couple of chats.
Well, actually, our thought was that this discussion on mechanical theosophy has very much to do with this first chat, how do we eschew all causes? And we thought maybe before we attempt to answer that, we might just read where that comes from the Voice of the Silence.
Please.
The context, page 45. That secret path leads the Arhant to mental woe, unspeakable woe for the living dead, and helpless pity for the men of karmic sorrow, the fruit of sages, the fruit of karma, sages dare not still. For it is written, teach to eschew all causes, the ripple of effect as the great tidal wave, thou shalt let run its course. So spoken of knowledge before is necessary. So sometimes having knowledge, the duty of another is full of danger. They have to work through understanding the causes and setting up new causes that will help them grow out of that sorrow. And we can't do it for them. So that's the kind of a mechanical philosophy. Just because you see suffering, you just don't, in a knee-jerk reaction, think, as said before, you have to do something to help the other person out of it. You can point them in the right direction, but they have to take responsibility and do it themselves.
Yeah, it teaches to eschew all causes is becoming responsible and learning through spiritual knowledge how to discriminate, how to become wise in your ways, you know, that you're not to live the life, you know, rather than just talk the life. And there's another chat.
Yes, it is sin bad karma? Can we avoid the results of our negative actions by prayers, confession, chanting, mantras, baptism, or whatever? Well, we would say no. We can't avoid the results of our actions.
We can mitigate them by good deeds, by helping, you know, by being a benefit, you know, and dropping the cloak of selfishness. And I think probably that is the easiest way for us to absolve ourselves of sin, because our sin is usually of a very selfish nature.
Right.
Sorry for interrupting.
No, that's fine. So when the question is sin bad karma, it's amazing that if we do sin, we can learn from it. So in which case, it's good karma. So we can't make blanket statements in regards to the question of, is sin bad karma?
Well, it's also funny. What is sin? What is sin? Lust. Lust run amok. You know, it's that passions and desires. You know, you do not, it becomes stronger by its use, by its indulgence. So, we sin, the sin of, what's the sin? Of selfishness, of separateness. You know, that's the ultimate sin. And that's probably why we sin in the first place, because we feel we're separate from everyone else. We got to do this for on our own. SL.
Well, of course, we would like to avoid the results of our negative actions. We want to get away from the pain and suffering. We do whatever we can to want to avoid that. But let's just play it out in the mind. What if it were possible? Or if it were feasible that we actually could avoid the results of our actions, our negative actions? What would that result in? What would be the result of the possibility that we could actually avoid the results of our action? What would that produce?
Yeah, it would chaos.
How would you get rid of them is the question. You know, what they would just disappear?
If it were possible for a human being or a group of human beings to avoid the consequences, painful consequences of their negative actions, what would be the result of such possibility?
Well, you see it in the world today. They don't think there's a consequence for what they're doing. You know, people are guided by at this time in the history of humanity by their passions and desires. You know, so we know what the end result would be. You know, there's the guiding force is the higher nature, and without that as a guiding force, you just have I would imagine an immoral environment.
Mm-hmm. We have a comment here, Theosophy Hall.
Just a couple of things. Well, we think the effect of people not receiving the consequence of their sins, so to speak, is that they're going to continue to sin, and the consequence is coming. So it's going to be all the bigger consequence. That's first. Ben, also, we were talking about as far as sin is concerned, can we mitigate sin? And the chair talked about, well, yes, by doing good deeds and living in a certain way, the effect of that can be to mitigate it. But it helps to think of it in terms of, it's not like there's somebody up there with, you know, checking off, okay, you did a couple of good things today, that cancels out a couple of bad things you did yesterday. What it is if we make a certain decision and reflect back on, wow, this is how I've been living my life, now I'm going to live it this way and live an altruistic life with all that in terms of it. That act alone doesn't make the sin go away, because the effects of the sin is coming back. However, living a life according to certain principles results in us growing in wisdom and understanding. That way, when the effects of the sin comes back, it's not going to be as devastating to us, because we have grown in character, wisdom, understanding. And when they come back, we're going to be in a place higher than we were when we first created that cause, and perhaps be more ready to wisely deal with the lesson that will inevitably return to us.
Thank you. We still have a few minutes left.
You know, there's a concept that everything that we have thought, said, or have done exists somewhere in time. So that, you know, we don't think of ourselves as being that dynamic. I know our thoughts, we said, well, you know, how can they be cause anything, you know? Well, our thoughts, more or less, we're told, don't go very far from our immediate surroundings. But those deep and profound thoughts, you know, connect with others of the same nature. You know, I mean, thoughts of violence connect with other thoughts of violence. So, you know, that we connect ourselves with others through our thoughts. Was there another chat, or did you just?
Yeah, there's two of them.
Well, please, could you read them?
Yeah. The first one that came in goes along with the one, how do we avoid the results? Says, what about chanting the Hare Krishna mantra? Will that mitigate our karma? Yes.
make us happy, I think, sometimes. We get a lot of exercise, and there's a lot of group camaraderie and a lot of a feeling of that energy. The chanting of the name of God does have an uplifting effect. That's why it's done. But it's you have to live it rather than just speak it. And chanting, there's a place for that. Oftentimes when we can't quiet the mind, saying some kind of mantra, some kind of combination of words or sounds will calm the mind. It will distract the mind from what it is so absorbed in. The lower mind becomes so, it takes us away. And sometimes we're going nuts. I got to go away from this thing, and sometimes so you try to get quiet. We could do that by chanting or mantras or whatever else to concentrate our mind within. There's all kinds of techniques. Patanjali Yoga aphorisms. There's a whole expression of them. Even though it's very esoteric in this presentation, it's very simple, and it's our understanding of it. We need to look at it and just consider it. It's just an avenue for us to be able to withdraw within the chambers of the heart.
And
We say it's the mind, but it's actually the heart and mind combined.
to finish that thought off and to end the meeting, we have a chat that says calm, quiet deliberation untangles every knot. So thank you.
Even in the heart.
Yes. Yes, so thank you, everyone.
SL, you have something you want to say?
I think we still have a minute just to say, so the Gordian knot in Greek mythology, nobody could untie it. Alexander the Great was told that he couldn't rule Asia unless he untied the Gordian knot. So he took his sword and he cut the knot in half. So sometimes after we calmly deliberate, we have to act with a knowledge of karma
Yes.
and responsibility.
As best we know how.
Yes.
Thank
Thank
you, everyone.
you. Have a good
See
morning, a good
you
day,
Wednesday.
good week.